Hey. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You probably want to turn the vocal effects off now that he's not on stage anymore. I forgot to do that because I'm a jerk. All right. Yeah, I really do. Like, it's a lot of fun. There's like a reverb and an echo that's on there, and I can like adjust how severe they both are. So it is really fun to mess with Laura and that. When like you're talking and I like play with the echo and the reverb. I can tell. All right. How's everybody doing today? Doing okay? Feeling good? Feeling great? Better than 20 minutes ago. Well, that's good. Jesus will do that to you. All right. So I have the unfortunate pleasure of getting to talk about tithing, everyone's favorite church message in the whole world. I mean, I'm stoked about it. I love it. I think it's great. But yeah, so we got this tithing thing. But yeah, so we got, you know, some of the leadership got together and we were just kind of talking about, and it's the same conversation that every church has when they look at their finances and they're not where they want to be. It's like, man, somebody should preach a sermon on tithing. Because that's what you do when people aren't, you know, doing what they're supposed to. You badger them from the pulpit so that they do what they're supposed to do. And then everything's fine and Jesus loves you again. Man, I wish it were that easy. I was going to say, yeah, I mean, like, it's way easier. Like, you already have it. It's free. But we did. There we go. Big ups to Caleb, by the way. He was, like, on it tonight. He's not in the room to hear me say that. But when he gets back, I'll make sure to tell him again. So I was kind of volunteered to do it. Like I said, I've been tithing for a long time, so everybody's kind of just, and I like it. I think it's a really great topic that a lot of people sort of, there's a big stigma and there's a lot of trepidation about talking about tithing because I think it's done so poorly, and because of that, everybody's kind of like, ooh, we don't want to talk about it. Like, we don't want to talk about people and their money and all of that kind of stuff, and, you know, you can debate the statistics on how often Jesus talks about money versus all kinds of other things, but ultimately that's not what we're going to be talking about tonight. So we'll start with a little bit, you know, because this is what I like to do. I'm a teacher guy, so I like to ask questions and give history lessons and all that kind of stuff. So does anybody actually know what tithing is? Give it to me straight. And yeah, hands up. This is a rhetorical question. What is it? Okay, that's good. It's a good start. I like that. Anybody else have any? Give me one. It did. Oh, my God. If I were actually grading you, you would get like a billion extra credit points for that because that dude's only mentioned in the Bible twice, and you just pulled it one out. That was the bomb. If I were able, I'd do a backflip right now. I'm so excited. No, that was really good. Anybody else? What is tithing? I mean, that's it. Okay, so no, we're right. Here we go. We're going to start in Genesis 14. You don't actually have to go there because it's a real quick summation of what's about to happen. So, Abraham gets blessed by Melchizedek, and in response to his blessing, Abraham offers Melchizedek a tenth of his goods. So that's sort of like before we have the Levitical law, we have a man respond to the supernatural, and we can get into the theology of who Melchizedek is and all that kind of stuff later, but he responds to that by giving this 10% of his goods. Later on in Genesis 28, this is where Jacob has the vision of the ladder from heaven. And so at the end of the chapter in Genesis 28, the Lord says that he's going to deliver Jacob and, you know, his people back out of bondage and all that kind of stuff. And Jacob says, because of that, I will offer you a tenth of my goods. So Jacob does the same thing that his grandfather did way back. Whether that story was passed down, you know, from the generations is, you know, it's not mentioned. But before we have the Levitical law and all that kind of stuff, which is where most people are going to pull their, like, tithing scriptures from, we have these two offerings of the same caliber for different situations, which is really fantastic. But where most people are going to start is going to be in Leviticus 27. So this is going to be 30 and 32, and I'll actually read this. And this is actually near the end of the book, which is good because Leviticus is somewhat boring. And all the tithe of the land, whether of the seed of the land or of the fruit of the tree, is the Lord's. It is holy unto the Lord. And if a man will at all redeem aught of his tithes, he shall add thereunto a fifth part thereof. And concerning the tithe of the herd or of the flock, even of whatsoever passeth under the rod, the tenth shall be holy unto the Lord. King James, the way that Jesus wrote it. So we have in Leviticus, the Lord set up a system to supply the Levites with what they need to perform their duties of being like on permanent temple watch. In case you guys don't know, the tribe of Levi, like, they're the ones that do everything inside of the temple. Like, that is their job. An entire portion of Israel is tasked with, you are to upkeep and do the offerings and, like, do everything that the Lord requires for the entire nation of Israel. But it's so big, the whole tribe has to do it, to the exclusion of all of your other worldly duties. And because of that, the rest of you guys, because they are going to make you good with me, you guys are going to pay for it, is basically how the Lord sets it up. It's a very, very gross summation. But it turns into they need food to serve the Lord because they're doing it 24/7. They don't have, it's not like now where it's like, you know, we can go get a job or like pastoring pays the bills. Like, I mean, don't ask Alberta that, but, or Laura, or anybody. So it's different back then. So this idea of the tithe kind of got left over from the Old Testament where, you know, people are growing their own food, they're raising their own cattle, they're producing their own goods. So it's a tenth of whatever the thing is that they do. If you grow wheat, your tithe is a tenth of the wheat that you grow off the top. If you're a cattle herder, it's a tenth of your cattle that comes right off the top. If you have goats, if you, I don't know, if you're a silversmith, I don't know, whatever your job is, your tithe is a 10% portion of the thing that you produce to make sure that all of the needs of the Levites are provided for, again, so they can like intercede and do all that stuff for the Lord. As time progresses and people stop growing their own crops and making their own things, it turns into money because money is something easier. Like, I don't really grow my food anymore. I have some tomato plants at the house because I like to garden, but I'm not living off of my tomato plants. If I were, I'd be much thinner and also dead. Yeah, the beta carotene in tomatoes will actually make you turn orange if you have enough of it. Fun fact. As people stopped producing those things, it basically got transformed into a 10% of the income that you make. Because again, there aren't very many people that just produce goods anymore. And so that's where we have this idea of 10%, but that's what tithe is. The root words that we use for all of these things, when you get back into Greek and Latin and Hebrew and all of that, it's like the base 10 system is where we're starting here. So we're talking about a tenth of the goods. If you pull into the New Testament, and I'm just going to real quick, like speed, give you some citations, the idea of the tithe is still the same, but and we'll talk about it in a second in a little bit more detail. But Jesus gets rid of the tithe. But the purpose of offerings to the church is to support the church. Just like it was in the Old Testament, it's the same thing in the New Testament. If you don't believe me, Galatians 6, 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and 16, Romans 12 and 15, Philippians 4, Luke 8 and 10, Acts 16 and 28. I just wanted to pull the top 10 for you. But that's only about half the list. Yeah. So now that we know what it is, this is my favorite part. Who tithes? Oh, absolutely. I'm asking, like, I tithe. Legit, tithe. Why would it not count as a tithe? Is it 9%? Is it 9.7%? 5%? So for those of you guys that do tithe, why do you tithe? It's a good one. I like that one a lot. It's a good one. No, it really is. It's like super encouraging. That's true. If you get into the New Testament, like it gets even better too. Yeah. Anybody else? Like why do you, who out of those, like I said, those of you guys that do tithe, why do you do it?
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome. That's awesome. Anybody else? I got you next. You use the D word. Love it. That's good. That's super good. Yeah, use the D word. We're going to get to that one here in a little bit. So I'm going to give a little bit of a personal testimony, and I talked to my wife, and she's totally okay with me sharing this, which is good. And some of you guys have heard this. I know Dave, Veronica, you all can check out for the next couple of minutes. We've been talking about this at Bible study a couple of times. So I grew up in the church, and then when I turned into a teenager, I knew everything, so I decided that God was stupid, and I walked away. But not even stupid, and he wasn't real. And then he was like, nah, bro. And then I came back, and that's 31 years basically just summed up right there. But I remember being a kid, like I went to church with my parents, my grandparents went to church with us. It was a really old church, it was Presbyterians, and I remember one thing that my grandmother said, and it's like, and I remember it from being very, very young, which is very atypical. Like I don't usually remember things from my childhood. But I remember her, like I was in the adult Bible school class before church because there were no other kids there that day, and they were talking about tithing, and she had said, if you tithe, the Lord will take care of you. And theology behind that aside, like, I remember that, and I've always believed that. And so, like, back in 2005, when I got saved, and, like, I started going to church again, and, like, really got saved and started going to church and all that, like, I've always tithed. I'm very regular about it. Like, if I miss a week, like, I make it up the next week. Like, I have never, even in, like, my unemployment periods, which have, thank the Lord, have not been very many of them, like, even when I did have small amounts of money, like, I made sure to set a portion aside of anything that came in, like, for the Lord. And I've always done that, and like this, I want to preface this but also by saying, like, this is not a look at me and how awesome I am, because it really is like a look at God and how awesome he is. But I have never in the history of my life, since I was 16 years old and got a bank account, ever been in the red. On purpose, on accident, anything. My wife has been tithing since, like, she was a little kid. My wife grew up in the church. She went to seminary. She is a pastor. Like, she's been in the church her whole life, and it's the same thing. Like, she's never missed a week. And when my wife and I got married, I gave more than my wife, and once we got married, I was like, no, like, you're nickel and diming, and we can't do that. Because my wife, because she's a pastor, has like a taxable portion of her salary and a non-taxable portion of her salary and like a portion of her salary that gets paid to like this for these things and a portion of her salary that gets in this area for these things because the denomination like takes some of it to provide resources and retirement plans and things like that. And so she was tithing off of the amount that she brought home. And I remember like us sitting down and having a conversation and I was just like, I don't think that's fair. That, like, you're going to tithe off that amount and not off the whole thing that you make. And so she was like, all right, I can get behind that. And, like, she started tithing more. Since my wife and I have gotten married, same thing. Like, our account has never gone into the red. There have been months where it's kind of like, man, we did something stupid, and we're going to have to, like, pull money out of savings or something like that. And it's like all of a sudden that bill that was supposed to show up at the end of the month is $100 less than it was going to be. Or it's like, you know, it's like, and every time. Coincidence would be if it happened every now and then, but this is like a no matter if we do it on purpose, whether we know we're going to come up short because of a large expenditure that we had and we budgeted it, or if we made a mistake and like, oh snap, like we're going to have to dip into savings, like we have never had to do that either. And like, it is absolutely 100% like hand to God, like it's the favor of the Lord, because like because we give. You can take the tithing word out, but it's because we give that he gives back. But to give you an idea of that, like between my wife and I, we both tithe $450 a piece to our individual churches, and then we each have a missionary that we support for $50 a month in addition to that. So out of our $90,000 a year combined salary between the two of us, we tithe over $12,000. It's like 13% of our salary. It is, in fact, the biggest bill that we pay. We tithe $275 more than our mortgage, more than our restaurants, like more than any other single bill that we have. So like you can hear some of these old school preachers that are like, the portion you give to God should be the biggest portion that you give it all. And it's like, well, that's unreasonable. Like if you live in LA and you're paying like, you know, $2,000 a month for rent, you might not have more than that to give to the Lord. And he's not going to be sad that you paid your rent. But for my wife and I, like it's very important that the largest expenditure that we have, like, in our lives is in support of, like, the church and the job that it does. And again, this is not a, hey, look at me and how awesome I am, but it's just like it's important to me, and I see the fruit of it on an almost daily basis, you know? So, and it's not about how much you give, and this is where we're going to kind of take the turn from tithing into, oh my God, I can't believe he's saying that. Not really. No blasphemy. I try to keep it blasphemy free today. But it's not how much you give. It's about who you give to first. Like, that's a big thing, too. Because a lot of people will tithe, and this is sort of like, I'm assuming that everyone's familiar with, like, the widow and the two mites story. You know, the little old lady comes up and she puts her two pennies in the plate, and like everybody else at the church is ragging on her because they came up in their pomp and circumstance and dumped tons and tons of money in. And Jesus is like, no, she gets the blessing. Like, she knows what's going on. Because it isn't about how much you give, but it's what you're giving to first. If you pay all of your bills and then you decide that God gets the scraps, you're doing it wrong. Like, if you make sure you are provided for before the Lord gets his portion, you're doing it wrong. Like, Morgan, like, hit the nail on the head. Like, you give that first fruit of what you have and say, the Lord will provide. Like, it's an offering to him to support the ministry of the kingdom, and because you're giving to him, he gives back to you. You know? I mean, for those of us that have kids, which is only a few of us in the room right now because the rest of them are not in the room, like, you know, and I haven't got, like, my kids aren't of the age yet where, like, Evelyn has an allowance or anything like that, but it's like, I remember being a kid and, like, saving up money to, like, get my dad something for Father's Day, and it was just sort of like, you know, I got my $5, Mom, let's go get Dad something, and it's like, she didn't care that, like, I had $5, like, $5 didn't make a dent in the present that we were going to get for him, but it's like, I decided that I valued my father, so I saved up my resources to give him something, and it's like, the fact that I put in money to that, like, like I said, it didn't affect the present. Like, my mom had $5 extra. No big deal. I'm not, like, giving him something he doesn't have. You know, God's got the cattle on 1,000 hills. You know? That's Psalms. Scripture citation footnote. But it's the saying, you are worth the thing that we here in this world esteem the most. Because really, if we look at the nitty-gritty, like, that's, you know, money is the thing that makes the world go round. It's like people fight over jobs and, you know, they go to Black Friday sales and punch out complete strangers to get $200 off of that television. And it's like countries go to war to get resources because they don't have enough money to keep their country going. And, you know, so it's just like the world is made up and its major motivation is it's greed. Like, we need more of the things to keep our, you know, standard of living the way it is, or to increase it. And when we are deficient of that, we worry beyond calculable measure. You know, you can look at all kinds of statistics about like marriages failing and stuff like that. And it's like most of those things happen because of finances. It's like, this is the root, you know, it's like Jesus even said it. Please quote me on this. The love of money is the root of all evil. Not money is the root of all evil. Put it in context. Captain Context. No. I get context exclamation point on my knuckles. I could get Captain Context. I could do it. Offset it by one. Just have, I could come up with someone, whoever. I need an artist and a marketer to come up with some sort of brand symbol for me so that I can get it tattooed on my pinkies for Captain Context. This is good. This is good, guys. I'm really happy with this. Yeah. All right. So here's the meat. This is really where we're going. This is where we're going here. So when we get into the New Testament, so we're moving away from tithing because tithing is important, but it's not the end. Or it is the end. I should say it's the end. It's not the means, and the means is what matters. Flipped that around. My bad. Strike that. Reverse it. Gene Wilder for everybody. So yeah. So when we get into the New Testament, Jesus takes tithing, and he does pretty much the same thing that he does for every other concept from the Old Testament that he explains. He takes it out of the law and puts it in our heart. You know, you look on a woman with adultery, and you have now committed it. You think about killing your brother, and you have committed the sin. Jesus is like, a tenth is not good enough anymore. He looked at the rich young ruler and said, sell everything you have and give it to the poor. You know, Paul in Acts talks about the disciples and like the new converts in the first century church selling everything they had and keeping all of it in common so that they could live together. So it's not that it's a set number anymore. I mean, 10% is nice. Like, it's a good way to measure. Like, it's a nice way to keep discipline. It's like if you're lifting weights, you don't necessarily care how much, I mean, unless you're like a beefhead, like, you don't care about how much weight you can lift for the sake of lifting weight. Like, the weight is a benchmark so that you know you're actually increasing, that you know that you're making progress. And so this is what Jesus has done with the tithe. Like, this isn't you're going to sit down with some spreadsheets and a calculator and a pen and pencil, and you're going to total up your net worth and these earnings and this earnings, and you're going to make sure that you give me that 10% down to the penny. Jesus is like, no, no, no. Like, we can use the 10% as a yardstick, but really, like, 10% is the starting point. Like, you want to give to the kingdom? Give it all. You know, he's like, I gave everything for you guys. We didn't do like, you guys can have up to half my kingdom. Jesus is like, no, you get the whole kingdom. And he's like, and all I want from you is everything you have back. Everything. Like, you know, he wants your life. He wants your time, your talent, and your treasures. The three T's of evangelical giving. If anybody needs me, I'll be in a puddle on the floor. It's fine. So now we have this idea of giving that isn't, again, it's not just about obligation. It's not just about duty. It isn't just about, like, fulfill your obligation, check your box off. Jesus has turned it into this new, wonderful, fantastical spiritual discipline, and we call it generosity. This is a New Testament thing. This is, I mean, it's an Old Testament thing because God was around back then, too. But, like, Jesus really gets into the heart of this that, you know, it's a new thing. Let's be generous. Don't just give out of obligation. And we're going to talk about that in a minute, but, like, let's give abundantly. Let's give over, you know, let's give more than what we have. Let's just like to give, no matter what it is. You want to give money, you want to give time, you can fix cars, you want to go fix somebody's car for free, like, you know, you want to build somebody a website, like, whatever you do, what's your thing? Give somebody that, you know? So the thing about tithing that I think a lot of people get really hung up on is that it looks holy nowadays, because we do it in church. But like I said, it's just an end. Like, generosity is the means to the end of tithing. But tithing basically is just, it's the number on the side of my barbell. It lets me know, like, oh, it's not even the number. Like, it's an exercise that I do with my barbell. You know? There are many, many ways to be generous. It's just everybody kind of esteems tithing in the church above it all because it's like, well, we're giving to God, so it's extra super spiritual. And it's like, well, you know, if you give to the least of these, you know, you've done the same thing to me. So it's like, how come that's not as spiritual as tithing, you know? I mean, Jesus thought it was, so who am I to question him? But yeah, so when you don't tithe, the church gets, like, freaked out at you. And basically, it's a good reason to get freaked out because it's kind of it's a symptom. Because if you're not tithing, if you're not regularly giving to the church, it means one of two things. One of them is more significantly bad than the other. And I don't think I have anybody in this category here. Number one, and this is the bad one, that you just don't want to give. And that can be manifest in a bunch of other ways in your life, but generally it tends to manifest if you are a churchgoer, like in that particular area, you'll see it very, very, you know, these are the kind of people that are just like, man, the preacher hasn't preached a good message in 2 years. I'm going to stop giving my money. I don't know why I pulled that accent out. I'm sorry. Please, anyone from my homeland that's listening to this, don't think I'm talking to you. I know, it just got bad. But, you know, it's like the worship didn't bless me, so I'm not going to give. I don't agree with the denomination's principles. I'm going to stay here, but I'm not going to give. And it's just like people have turned the giving of their money into, like, the metric of whether you pleased me or not at church. And that is absolutely 100% unequivocally wrong. The second issue, which is the one that is not a big deal, is that you haven't developed the, Jason, say the D word, the discipline of tithing, because that's what generosity and tithing are. They are spiritual disciplines, not to be confused with spiritual gifts, because spiritual gifts you get from God. Spiritual disciplines, you gonna work for yourself. Which is one of the reasons a lot of people don't like this one, because the only way to tithe is to tithe. I'm just saying. There you go. Hang on. It's getting hot. Must be that Holy Spirit fire. Or the blasphemy. It's a hellfire. Could be that one. Maybe it's just me. But yeah. Like I said, it's a spiritual discipline. And so, you know, if those of you guys that went through Encounter here, like Tommy said something while we were there, and you've probably heard it. Someone at least once say it from the pulpit, and if you've come to Bible study, you've heard me say it 5 or 6 times. But the fruit of discipline is discipline. The only way to get disciplined in something is to do it. Rachel, like, how much fun is it to go to CrossFit? It's not fun, but, like, you do it because the more you do it, the more you do it, right? Like, I've been riding my bike to school, like, and it's not a huge thing, but it's just like, hey, it's like 7 miles a day. Sometimes it's raining, sometimes it's not. And, like, you know, my kids knock my bike over in the kitchen, and it's really annoying some days. But, like, I'm trying not to have diabetes and die. I mean, the die part is inevitable, but I'm trying to stave that off as long as I can. But, like, the first, you know, if I go a week without doing it, like Jason said, like, you know you're supposed to do it. Because, like, when you did it, there was life there. But then when you stop, you come up with all of these excuses about, well, this is why I don't need to do it anymore. But deep down, like, you know that it's good. And it's the cultivating of that discipline. Just pulled an Alberto. Spit a little bit, sorry. But it's the cultivating of that discipline that allows you to get better at the discipline. If you want to be generous, go out and be generous. Like, you can't pray to be generous. Like, this isn't a, Lord, give me the anointing of tongues, and it's just going to happen. Like, you can't fake your way into generosity. Like, you can't pray your way into generosity. Like, you have to do it. This is one of those, like, a lot of people want to get into this whole, like, the faith without works is dead thing. Like, this is the works. Like, the work doesn't save you, but it's a pretty good indicator of whether you're there or not. But the only way to do the work is to go out and do it. Does that make sense? Okay, good. That's awesome. So, I have a little litmus test. This is really short. This isn't inclusive of, like, everything. But here's a couple of characteristics, just a few, of people that are generous. Generous people tip well. I know. Generous people will help other people move, even if they don't pack their boxes before. And even if they never help you move back. And even if they don't give you gas money. And even if they don't buy you pizza. Or whatever. You know? Generous, huh? You did feed me pizza. And I think you got me beer, too. Which really, like, that's the weight of my heart. It's really the weight of my liver. But it's fine. But, okay, so generous people also make themselves available for other people. Because, like I said, generosity isn't necessarily just about giving. If that is an area in which you are gifted, because being a good steward and, like, being financially blessed, like, is absolutely a supernatural gift. Like, I'm not a big supernatural guy, but, like, I'm going to take that one. Like, that one's mine. Name that and claim it. There you go. Just go ahead and sigh that off for a second. But like I said, so they make themselves available for people, and here's the kicker for that. It's generally at the expense of their own free time. If you're only going to go and hang out with people, if you're only going to spend time with people when it's convenient for you, if you're only going to help people when it's convenient for you, you are not generous. You're available. That's all. And they give of themselves. Like I said, they give of their time. They give of their money. They give of the talents that they have. The important thing is the give there. Non-generous people, they put a price on their services. Like, usually if someone calls me and they're like, because I can do a little bit of mechanic-y stuff, they're like, hey, I need my brakes changed. I'm like, all right, cool, give me a six-pack of beer. If you don't give me a six-pack of beer, like, I'm not going to not change your brakes. And everyone that shows up knows that. It's just a little thing that I say. But if you are offering your services in exchange for something, you're not being generous, you're selling yourself. Like, you're just whoring your service out. In the basic, most basic sense of the word. If you give with stipulations, like if you help somebody out knowing that, you know, later on I'm going to be able to call in a favor, that's not generosity. Like, you know, we don't keep account of that. And then, so here's the other important thing too about being generous. Being generous has everything to do with you and nothing to do with the person to whom you are giving. If you don't give homeless people money because you think they're going to go waste it on beer, you are not a generous person. That is not like prudence. That is not shrewdness. That is not wisdom. That is an excuse for you not being generous. If you're the kind of person that's just like, oh, the homeless guy wants money, well, let me take you to McDonald's, you just concocted a better excuse to not be generous. So, like, yeah, if you are not giving because of the response to your giving, then you are not generous. Because the Lord can work through anybody that you give things to. And he will, absolutely. You give, and the Lord rewards. Sometimes that's giving you money back. Sometimes that's you getting your mind changed because that homeless guy was actually hungry. And he really did use that money to buy food, not beer. And if he did, big deal. Doesn't affect you any. You know, but like I said, being generous has everything, absolutely everything to do with you. But here's the good news, and like I said it before, we can exercise them because they are disciplines and they are not gifts. The more we do it, the better we get at it. But that's the only way to get better at it. So if we could, Laura, now it's your turn. We get to do a thing. I have Bible verses that I'm going to put up behind my head. If you want to follow along and not up there, we're in 2 Corinthians chapter 9. But we're going to do a thing. This is one of my favorite things. We're going to read a section, and we're going to exegete it. No, we're not going to eisegete it. I loathe eisegesis. In case you don't know the difference, exegesis is when you take when you look at the Bible and you see what it says. Eisegesis is when you take the Bible to make what you say fit it. So if you look at a Bible verse and you're like, oh yeah, that one sounds like that'll be good, and you pick that one, and then you pick this one, and then you pick this one, and you pick this one because they fit the message you're trying to say, that's eisegesis. And that's wrong. Hashtag Captain Context. All right, so Laura, if you want to put those up, that'd be great. And it's in New King James because Paul, with his really fantastic Greek writing, gets super confusing here. But that's okay. That's why I'm here. We're going to break this down. For those of you guys listening to the recording, I just did a breakdown. All right, so here we go, starting in verse 6. But this I say, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. So let each one give as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound towards you, that you, always having all sufficiency in all things, may have an abundance for every good work. That's the one I'll get tattooed on my head. As it is written, he has dispersed abroad. He has given to the poor. His righteousness endures forever. Now may he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food supply and multiply the seed you have sown and increase the fruits of your righteousness, while you are enriching in everything for all liberality, which causes thanksgiving through us to God. For the administration of this service not only supplies the needs of the saints, but is also abounding through many thanksgivings to God. while through the proof of this ministry, they glorify God for the obedience of your confession to the gospel of Christ and for your liberal sharing with them and all men. And by their prayer for you, who long for you because of the exceeding grace of God in you. Thanks be to God for his indescribable gift. That's a great section. So, if Laura wants to slide back a slide, see what I did there? So we're going to start in 6. It's really, really good. But this I say, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. That sounds pretty good, right? It's karma. Before the idea of karma, we had Jesus and reaping and sowing. It's great. So here's the thing. We don't give because there is a reward, but we're going to get all biblical on it, and we're going to hit some Hebrews up. I give knowing that there is a reward. This is where the supernatural part of it comes in, because we first have to believe that Jesus is a rewarder of those who seek him. So if you don't believe that there's any fruit behind giving, well, guess what? You're not going to see any fruit from your giving. If you believe it, if you understand it, if you actually take this verse and like put it into your core, because again, this isn't just talking about money. This is your, you know, this is your actions. This is your words. This is the time you invest in people. Whatever it is, if you sow sparingly, you will reap sparingly. There is no conditions for that. If you A, then B. It's the most basic formula of logic that exists. But if you sow bountifully, you will also reap bountifully. I know this because I see it in my checkbook. And again, I don't give to get back, but I give 100% knowing that I will have more given to me. To he that has, more will be given. Jesus says that. It's in the red letters. I promise that. So let each one give as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity, because God loves a cheerful giver. So this is where all of those preachers who try to get up here and talk you into giving their money go out the wayside. Because if you coerce somebody into it, if you just sort of twist their arm and spin the Bible so that they're giving, then, well, that's sort of grudging and out of necessity. It's not really what he's looking for. Again, God doesn't need your money. He wants your heart to look good. He wants that generous spirit to be cultivated in you. He wants that discipline to show fruit in your life. So if you feel ashamed because you don't give, then we need to have a talk. Because I'm going to pray that off of you. Because if you don't have it, that's fine. Give it anyway. You'll get more back. But yeah, no one should feel like, you know, tricked into giving money to the Lord, and no one should feel ashamed because they don't. Because Jesus doesn't work on those kind of concepts. Well, that's not true. He does work them into the ground. That's it. With a pile driver. Mm-hmm. And God is able to make all grace abound towards you, that you, always having all sufficiency in all things, may have an abundance for every good work. So Paul is doing something that's very, very Jewish, and he is saying a thing and then saying something else, and then he's going back to saying the first thing he said. This is basically verse 6 over again. And so when this happens in like Jewish cultural writing, you know that this is the point that he is trying to make. It's a very Hebrew style of writing, which is funny because Paul was Greek. Just saying. It's funny to me. But yeah, like I said, if you sow bountifully, God is able, and this is the part that a lot of people, they lose their minds over. Like, they think that somehow, that God isn't going to have enough to give them. Like, somehow he went around to the entire world, and he's down to just pennies in his money bag when it comes to you. It's like, no. Like, he is able to give all things, and you will be provided for in all aspects of your life. So I'm going to skip 9 because it's a citation to the Old Testament. He's supporting his thesis in 6 and 8 with some Old Testament backup. It's basically what I did at the beginning of my sermon. So now he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food, supply and multiply the seed you have sown and increase the fruits of your righteousness, while you are enriched in everything for all liberality which causes thanksgiving through us to God. So here's like one of the best things about generosity is that it feeds itself. Like once you get into it, it's like a catch-22. You sow, God provides, it builds up thanksgiving and goodness in you, and then you want to give more. And as you give more, God provides more, and it causes thanksgiving in you to well up, and then you want to give more, and then God responds by giving you more. And I feel like I could just keep saying that over and over again. But that's how it works, and that's why God designed it like that. If you can just, you know, anybody see What About Bob? Baby steps, like, just take the one, you know, baby stepping out of the office. Like, if you can just put those two little pennies in the plate, like, God will reward you and increase your desire to give. Again, not an maybe scenario. Like, this is a, like, spiritual concrete concept. If A, then B. It dings good when I do that. But again, like that's what makes it so unique against other spiritual disciplines. Because even though we have to do the work, God still does the work. You know? Which is great. So this next chunk right here, 12, 13, and 14, like this is money. Which is still extra funny considering what I'm talking about. And also, it's going to make my Bible study attenders feel way smarter than everybody else. So for the administration of this service not only supplies the needs of the saints... So here's the one thing. You guys give to supply the needs of the saints, but Paul's like, it doesn't just do that. But also is abounding through many thanksgivings to God. So just like when you give, he creates that well of thanksgiving and joyfulness in you. When you give, the ministers in the church that benefit from that have that same level of joy being built up in them because they now have one less burden to, like, doing their kingdom work. So here's what, that's one thing right there. Then, while through the proof of this ministry, they glorify God for the obedience of your confession to the gospel of Christ. So they have the joy well up at them. They praise you guys. God gets glory because you are doing what the gospel says. That's good. For your liberal sharing with them and with all men. And by their prayer for you, who long for you because of the exceeding grace of God in you. So you give, you get built up to give more. The people that get from you get built up to do their work better. And then they glorify God in you because you did what you were supposed to do. So it's just like, God's getting glory from you. He's getting glory from your offering. He's getting glory for the people that you gave the offering to. And then, like, and all the while, like, joy and spiritual discipline are being built up all around. Like, there's nothing that sounds bad about that. So here's the part that ends up being super, super good. Who's read the book of John? Or some of it, at least. So how do people know we're Christians? Anybody know? There is, in fact, a right answer to this. Ooh, yeah, and you even put the qualifier on it. There you go. A lot of people like to sing that old, like, cheesy Bible camp song, and they'll know we are Christians by our love, and that's not right theology in the song. So Jesus says this to his disciples. It's in John chapter 13. Like, this is, like, Last Supper. I'm about to go die. Like, this is the put a sign at the beginning of this section of John for believers only kind of thing. And he says, they will know that you guys love me because of your love for one another. And a lot of people leave that last part out of there, but it's just like the world knows that we're Christians by the way we love each other, not the way we love them. And this is where I hopefully don't lose anybody. But so here's the thing. If you love everybody out there and you get them saved and you bring them into the building and you don't esteem your brothers, guess what? You just flash the biggest hypocrisy sign in the world at these new converts who don't really know anything about Jesus yet. And guess what? Now you got twice as much work to get them back in the door because they left because you don't know how to love your brothers and sisters. Like, that's why Jesus says something about that. And that's why Paul puts this here. You guys give, and it is a concrete, spirit-filled example of your love for one another, which is the only metric that the world has for telling them that you love God. Like, that's how Jesus puts it. Like, the only way they know that you love me is because you guys love each other. And Paul's like, well, here's a good example of that. Let me give you one. And so he puts this out right there. You guys give, you cultivate this discipline of generosity, not just to tithe, but to give to each other and to give of yourselves and to love one another in giving. Like, that's the black line on the pH test. Like, that's what we're going for. So, you know, Paul brings it in, and it's like, this is like foundational. If you want to reach the world, you give to each other. You can give to the world too, but if all you do is give to the world, then when they show up in the church, then they're going to wonder why you're not giving to them anymore. Does that make sense? Yeah, this is crazy. Hopefully not too far into the heresy bubble. So does this make sense? This good? Didn't go off the rails? Everybody still okay? Okay. So that's what I've got for tonight. I had one more thing, but at this point it seems immaterial. So we're going to leave it out. I got all hyped up at the end, so it's fine. No, it's fine. No. I mean, I'll pass it back around, but if my message is what made you give, then we need to have a talk. Yeah, we're going to take up a love offering. Churches love day of love offerings. Ooh. It hurts. Anybody have questions? Comments? Concerns? Blasphemy that needs to be addressed? Ooh. Oh, no, you didn't. Okay, this is good.